Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
Ladies and gentlemen, silence your phones. You only gonna hear my tone. It's special how we all alone. Get comfy, make yourself at home.
Ladies and gentlemen, Aaron Burr.
Do you think podcasts stink?
No, it's case by case. I do feel that so a lot of people think it's mandatory to have a podcast. Like, they feel they must have one. And sometimes you'll be a guest on a podcast. And it's like, where are we going with this? What's the thing? It seems like we're just rambling.
Yeah.
Rambling. And this couldn't possibly be interesting for
right.
the listener. And then they say, oh, we'll edit it down. But is there some direction we can go in that might like incite interesting conversation? And also, I feel live podcasts can be like when they do it at Moon Tower or South by Southwest, they have too many guests on.
Yeah.
Then everybody's competing for the mic. And I think that also is challenging for the audience when too many people are trying to talk over each other.
People try to just get clips now. So like I don't like podcasts. I hate them. I only do it because it's mandatory. I would much rather.
But it isn't mandatory.
Okay. Well, I'm going to listen to you, and because of that, and I'm trying to quit this, and I think that you've given me everything I can.
But
so this is the last one.
If you don't genuinely want to do it, you don't have to. Then why? Then why are you doing it?
It's the money's great. It's $250,000
per
month,
and it's owned by Elon Musk.
Yeah, and. The problem
no,
is
if
now it's
monetized,
gone public.
That's great.
I make like next to no money doing.
Oh, okay.
I could really.
I was
going to
say that's worthwhile for your family. That's...
It's not. Here's why. Look, I like shows. I like if this was an entertaining thing, and we're uh-huh. like, here's a big to do a show. Uh-huh. But I think because Rogan is what he is now, everyone thinks that he could just do what Rogan does. And that they're going to get rich. And I think it's oversaturated. And I think sometimes you're the most interesting person I talk to ever in my entire life.
Don't say that because you've just raised the bar for whoever's listening
to
this
podcast. No one cares. There's like a dozen people that watch this. The thing is...
Oh, it's being watched as well.
Not right now. Well, that's a camera. Yeah. But you are always... since I met you, you're one of the most interesting people I've ever met.
That's very kind. I don't know if that's true. And a lot of times why I...
It is. Most of the people I meet are incredible dullards.
I feel uncomfortable in podcast is I feel like I just ramble on and on and talk too much. And I find like that... and then I always at night, I'm like, what did I say? What did I say? My
like
stomach feels sick.
It?
Yeah.
But you don't... Okay, first of all, for people that don't know who you are, which is possible.
Which would be 90% of the population. It's not 1998, Aaron.
You, in 1998, was that the peak? 1998?
I feel like 98 was a peak. I had a really good run. I don't know how it happened or why. From about 91 to 2001. And as quickly as it started, it ended. Boom. Like at the same way.
Do you remember the moment it ended when you knew it was going
I think
going
it
downhill?
Really, really ended when I started doing Air America radio during the Bush era.
Why?
Because
it became about politics instead
because,
of...
Because, first of all, I think when you get so associated with a decade, and this may mean nothing to people who are younger, but there was a time when I worked a great deal in the 90s and... for whatever reason, was always a Gen X, what have you. And I'm not. I'm tail-end baby boomers. And I think Reality Bites had something to do with that. Everybody else was 21. I was 29.
And nobody thinks of you as a boomer.
I am tail-end of the boomers. And there was just a time where I got incredibly lucky. And it's like work, 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 and paneling on talk shows and stand-up specials. It just, you know, I mean, just all of this stuff. And some of the opportunities I didn't deserve. You know what I mean? It's like there's far more talented people who should be doing this. No, no, I'm not being falsely modest. And then now what has happened is now I'm paying dues the way it should have been in the first place. Now I have to struggle to get auditions, or I definitely don't get parts. Because also once you get typecast and associated with a time, people are, we don't want that again. We don't want that. And also people think, she only does one thing. And the thing is the first acting job I ever had, I started stand-up at 19, but I didn't start acting until 27, and that was the Larry Sanders Show. And I was asked to portray a certain type of character who was kind of surly and mean. And then I wasn't smart enough to not keep taking parts like that. People were like, let's have her do this again and again and again and again. And that's not me, but people think that is me. And to this day, in fact, today I got sent a script where I'm an asshole. First of all, it's not interesting to play. I don't want to further typecast myself. And like 90% of SAG after, I've done tons of things over the last 22 years that no one ever sees. That's basically 90%. You're working and you want to do stuff done off Broadway, done Broadway stuff. It's just, it doesn't resonate. Also, I don't have any social media platforms, things of that nature.
I like that about you.
It's just, it's not noble. It's value neutral. It makes me uncomfortable.
Why?
And there's a fake me tweeting and a fake Facebook me for some reason.
Yeah, like Garofaholic or something.
Yeah, I don't
know
who that is.
But you don't go out of your way to try and stop this
person?
No,
well, actually, there was a couple people over the years I've tried to stop who were more like trolls.
Yeah.
And apparently they have more rights than I do. Somebody bought the rights to my name a few years ago, like Janine Garofalo.
Yeah.
.com or something like that. And so that meant I couldn't
be JanineGaroffalo.com.
And they can use pictures of you and everything. Now, luckily, I didn't want a JanineGaroffalo.com.
Right.
But the thing is, I don't know what this person's putting out there. And then there was a thing called Garofalo Nation. I'd never say Garofalo Nation. Colbert owns Colbert Nation.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't do that. I have no idea what the fake me is tweeting. I have no control over that.
It seems like the fake you is a pretty nice, they just tweet your shows and stuff.
Well,
from what I see.
I have no idea, but the thing is when I say I don't have social media platforms.
And then they said you were behind Flint, Michigan's water.
Oh, that is true. You know how I feel about Flint, Michigan.
I have no
idea. And water.
Hey, did you ever hang out with Michael Moore?
Yes, I actually was on one of his series years ago. He had a series in the early 90s. Oh my God. I'm so sorry.
I remember
this. I forget what it was called. And I was in the cast of that. And then I've done some live shows with him.
And you like him?
I do.
He's smart.
He is very smart.
Does he like secretly eat when the cameras are off? He looks like a guy that really likes food.
Not that I've seen. I mean, he may enjoy eating. I don't know.
What's your favorite thing to sneak at craft services?
Oh, you know, I used to be such a craft service. When I was on Larry Sanders, my nickname was Snack Time. Because all I did, Jeremy Piven named me that. Because all I did was.
I forgot Piven was on that show.
Yeah. And Jeffrey Tambor, one time when I was eating, he came up to me and he said, "Stop. Stop." Because it's, especially in the early days of craft service, it was new to me. It's like, they have bagels and lox.
Yeah.
They have everything and they keep changing the food and there's more food. And. Ooh, now I'm properly lit.
Yeah.
I like that better. But I couldn't, and I would stuff my backpack full of snacks and things like that. Now I'm embarrassed to eat in front of people, so I do it in shame.
That's how you're supposed to binge eat.
It's
alone.
It's always alone.
I'll eat a whole pint of ice cream, and now I'm married. My wife sees it. She's disgusted by it, and I never used to judge
it. But a pint is not that much. To me, it's a bowl. That's a bowl. Like a Ben and Jerry's thing.
Yeah.
It is not four servings.
When they started making a small pint, you're like, this is one serving. I should eat this all
at a time. And I used to feel the same way when I drank. Finishing a bottle of wine is nothing.
That's what I used to do, too.
That is four glasses. And also, I'm doing it at least while watching. This is back when Hardball was on.
Yeah.
CNN. I was watching.
You used to love the news.
And I still like to dip in, but like anyone, if you care about things and you're a rational person, it's painful. It's painful, politics. And sometimes there's fatigue about it. And you can get in trouble for saying, excuse me, the most reasonable thing, but people loved it. We discussed this last week, vis-a-vis Chappelle.
Yeah.
People love to deliberately misunderstand or go off hearsay, or somebody told me somebody said this. It is so painful to deal with those things. And not being in social media and stuff can mitigate that to a degree, but that people will always find ways.
Do you like politics because you're smart or because you believe that the country could be something other than it is?
No. It's not politics per se I like. And
but
also,
you talk about, when I first met you,
I do,
you would
talk
have these
about
brilliant extended rants that didn't come across
as ranty.
But they're thoughts strung together that were very logical, and they also incorporated your own insecurities and your eccentricities. Right. And I always thought that they were brilliant
and funny. To some people, they like that. And to some people, they really dislike it.
Yeah, some people
and
really
are
dislike
very
it.
Upfront about that. Now, during the Bush era, it was particularly bad, especially gearing up to the illegal invasion of Iraq. And also after that, you can't say anything. You can't do anything. You can't. Yeah, you know, I mean, it was just a time that's easily forgotten how bad it was, and people getting castigated for saying the most reasonable things.
The Dixie Chicks.
The Dixie Chicks, that's one example. Because it's easy to mock and marginalize people in entertainment. There were plenty of people from the Pentagon, from the Vatican, and people that people can respect if that's how you want to deal with it, that were very much saying the same thing against the war, against the policies of the Bush-Cheney administration. But of course, you can't go after them. But it's very easy. Now, I didn't want to go on these news programs and do that. I started doing it as a favor for a very good friend who said they're not booking people other than actors so that you can mock and marginalize them, right?
Right.
And I didn't want to, but I was like, okay, I'll do it. I'll do it. I'll go on these shows because if people in entertainment at least aren't going on to talk about these things, they won't have anybody on. Because they're not going to have somebody from the Pentagon or anything like that.
What shows were these?
Oh, my God. I was on... I actually have in my diary, I made 250 appearances on various news programs, panels, radio shows.
Lot.
It was a lot. And pain. And the death threats, the hate
and
mail.
And you wanted to go on these shows?
No, I did not.
Let me explain something to people that don't know. So you're an incredibly talented comic, groundbreaking at the time. I remember I saw you at the Luna Lounge in 2001. This is when, and this was already, you were already huge, but this was at a point where alt comedy was just starting, and you
well,
were
Well, no, actually, alt comedy started in the 80s in places like San Francisco, Seattle, stuff like that. I for some reason, I've been given too much credit for quote-unquote alt comedy.
Okay.
It's just how I do stand-up. I'm not a strong joke writer. And what happened was, and even though I started in 85, when I would go on the road, I would see plenty of comics doing what would be considered, quote-unquote, alt comedy at the Holy City Zoo and places like that and at Lester's Follies in Austin. There was the scene going on concurrent with the mainstream scene.
The club scene.
And there happened to be a few articles written in Los Angeles around the time Nirvana broke, and they just dubbed it alt comedy and alt music. And they put myself and David Cross and Bob Odenkirk and these people.
And then
that
it was
were,
Largo
and
in
Largo,
LA.
Largo,
right?
Luna Lounge, Beth Lapidus deserves a great amount of credit for a scene. There was also Surf Reality and Baramundi and Reverend Jen here in New York deserves a lot of credit. But there was plenty of people, Sam Cedar, doing all kinds of comedy that would be considered, quote unquote.
So you're living
comedy.
In LA.
I was living in LA from like 90.
You're doing
90.
What show then? You're doing Larry Sanders' show?
I was
show?
On Larry Sanders' The Ben Stiller Show in the same year.
And then you go out, you do stand up at night.
Well, yeah, I would do stand when I could.
Would you go on the
night.
Road on weekends too?
No, I didn't do that.
Because you didn't have to.
No, not
and
that.
You didn't want
it's
to.
Just that that's sort of not me. I'm not one of those.
You don't
gotta
want
to. Gotta keep working, keep going.
you don't gotta
there was
plug
occasionally,
away.
Occasionally, there would be times where there'd be a gig on the weekends and stuff. But also I was doing a lot of movies at the time and you don't know when you're going to rap or anything and you can't leave.
I left The Incredible Hulk one day. I'm working with Ed Norton.
I heard about this. Ed Norton, who doesn't like me at all,
by the way. Doesn't like me at all. Because my line was, he's locked in, and then I hold a gun. And I messed up on one rehearsal because he goes, why is that guy not going? And I said, I'm an actor. I go on action. And then they go, just go when Ed goes. And then I had to do a gig where I was headlining and I had a hard out at 6 o'clock. And it's like,
that means nothing, the hard out.
That's what, and I go, I got to go head. I'm doing, there's people right. waiting
you
to see me.
You can never
in a club.
Plan. I learned that the hard way. You can't do it because hard out means nothing because you can't factor in all the things that happen
too
in a film.
Too many things happen on a
that
film
you'll
set.
Never rap when you...
Well, I left, and Ed Norton was very upset with me and looked at me very disappointed, like I wasn't serving the art.
Well, I guess you're supposed to commit to the film.
The thing you're doing.
And I was actually cast in Fight Club, and Ed Norton said no.
This is a great story, by the way.
And actually, it's one of those things, and I don't blame him entirely. He just felt I wasn't a good enough actor. But what was painful is I offered, even though I had contracts have been signed, everything.
Yeah.
And David Fincher.
Who directed that?
Who directed it. We had a meeting and he gave me the script and I was
did
flying
you like
back
the script?
To New York. Yes, I did. And I had read the book. I liked it
Were
very much.
Were you super excited?
Very much so. And
when you read the script... Don't let me stop you, but what's your favorite thing to do? Do you grab a really nice coffee and sit down and
read
the script?
Well, I was on a plane. So, and it's
See,
one
that's
of the,
nice. And you were sitting first class?
I was, because I wasn't paying for it. But now that I'm older, I'm willing to spend on first class because it doesn't get paid for. Because grandma, once you can't put the toothpaste back in the tube.
No.
And I have lots of miles built up. It's just... I'm not a big spender, but I'll spend on that or use my miles.
That's
on
what
that.
I do. And it was always my dream to, that's how you picture how you're reading a script in first class. Did you feel good about that?
It made me incredibly happy. Cause also I was like, this is amazing. Cause I've never, you know, like a lot of people in high school or growing up, I was neither popular nor unpopular. I mean, it was very unpopular in college. Oddly, I was like a pariah, that just didn't work out at all. College was a real bummer.
Where'd you go? Somewhere
Providence
in Boston?
College. Boo.
Where's that? Rhode Island. You didn't like it?
Were you it in just
theater or something? Liberal arts?
No, I was a history major. I just must have been such a. Also, I'm 5'1 and at the time weighed 160 pounds, which I guess.
Is that big?
I guess so, because it seemed that.
I'm having the best
people
time. Mike
enjoyed,
has no idea what's
enjoyed
happening.
Ignoring me a great deal.
You were ignored.
Well, I had two roommates freshman year who really didn't like me. There's three to a room.
But they call you fatty?
I'm sure behind my back.
Those bitches.
And if it was on,
where are they
on
now?
The weekends. Oh, they're nice. One of them I ran into. I'm sure they're very nice. You can't hold anything against 18, 19, 20-year-olds. It's just that those two got along great, and I didn't. I guess I cramped their style.
This is so sad.
Or I was just, that's okay. It happens to lots of people. I didn't expect it in college. I thought in college those things didn't happen, but it did.
Was it
so
like
then,
that in high school?
No, high school was fine. Totally fine because I was neither popular nor unpopular. It was in the sweet spot.
You just fly under
the
radar.
You just fly under the radar.
That's a good place to be.
It is a very
you
good
do
place
your work,
to be.
No one's bugging you. You don't have to be cool.
And
would
I'm
you smoke?
Still,
did you smoke cigarettes
I didn't
then?
Start smoking until
See?
College.
I had to smoke to fit in.
Well, they used to, and this is true, I am old enough that in my junior high and high school, there was a smoking lounge in junior high. That
Inside.
Seems in, outside. In,
oh yeah,
this
Mine,
seems
there was.
Inconceivable to young people today.
We called it the butt hot.
Inconceivable.
That's what we
and
called
the,
it.
The burnouts were the ones who smoked cigarettes.
Yeah. I my didn't, mom drove by once and saw me, and I couldn't say I was
junior high
it
school, 7th and 8th grade. Yeah. Smoking lounge. Isn't that something?
Mm-hmm.
And in college, you could still smoke in class when I was in class. That's how long ago.
Really?
In college. Yeah. Now, I didn't start smoking till college because I was trying to lose weight.
Yeah. And
that, no. But I also started drinking. And that's that helped me feel more comfortable around people. But it had already been established that I was a loser. And luckily, I started doing stand-up junior year and kept going to Boston. Also, there was a really great indie music scene in Rhode Island and Boston. And you find people that you
You find your like-minded souls
at these venues.
Outcasts that are now part
and they're not
of a
outcasts.
Community.
They just have better taste in music.
Okay,
and so and also there was this great indie radio station called WBRU from Brown University in Rhode Island. And when you get introduced to a different kind of music that's not in the mainstream, and then these bands are playing around, you find a whole other world. And I'm so very thankful. And then also I was turned on to Howard Zinn. People's History of the United States and some other, and Noam Chomsky.
Yeah.
And that changed me too. There's, it makes you think differently and realize there's more interesting people out there that are not maybe sharing Noam Chomsky and Howard Zinn's rationality and stuff like that. And so I met very good friends in that scene. And also I had some friends from high school that went to Wheaton College and made some very good friends. I would just drive there and hang out with them. And I had some friends at RISD and I would hang out there.
Yeah.
And then
did you think about transferring schools?
No, because I was such a bad student. I would have had to go down. Providence College is actually a good school. Okay. It's competitive. I would have had to go downward to transfer because I had a very low grade point average. Not a good student.
2.6?
It was probably lower than that.
Really?
It was probably... The only thing that saved me was Western Civ, which is mandatory. That's the only good thing about Providence College. 2 years, 5 days a week of this wonderful program called Western Civilization. Starting in Mesopotamia and ending wherever they are now.
You graduate.
I graduate with a history degree.
You start doing
and
more
I,
stand-up.
I already started doing stand-up and moved to Boston. And
the scene was good there. The
scene was fantastic, and it
was
good
there?
In Rhode Island.
Lenny Clark?
Lenny Clark and all those guys. But there was a mini boomlet in like 85 that started again. So there was tons of venues and things and lots of open mic time.
What was the
time.
Name of the Chinese restaurant?
The Ding Ho.
That's a very famous place.
But there,
what about
the
DJ
Ding Ho
Hazard?
Was closed.
Remember
DJ,
DJ Hazard?
But the Ding Ho was closed by the time I got there. So there was another Asian restaurant that had served Scorpion Bowls that was doing stand-up. But there was a lot of venues doing it. And then when Catch a Rising Star opened in Cambridge, that was really great.
Yeah.
Because Robin Horton curated a really good room. Like, he really put a lot of thought into the types of
good
comics.
Good host. The good acts host, would compliment
going
each
together,
other.
Compliment, yeah. Really thinking about it. And even though I enjoyed the other clubs, actually, I always failed at Nick's. And there was a thing called the Boston Comedy Riot that Nick DiPaolo and I co-won one year. They had the Rock and Roll Rumble,
and
WBCN.
You two, very similar.
Very similar. Actually,
similar styles.
I think he's hilarious.
I think he's one
hilarious.
Of the funniest people alive.
I have no problem at all with him as a comic.
Hilarious.
And I like him, although his politics are not my thing.
You're
and
polar opposites
we are
in
polar
terms
opposites.
Of politics. Polar opposites.
But,
do you guys still talk?
When I see him. When I see him.
Yeah.
But
he's hilarious.
But he's hilarious.
He's funny.
There's no denying that
he
he's a
no
good comic.
Line. He, yeah.
There's no problem with that. Sometimes the things he says are like, in fact, and I was going to say in my opinion, it's not an opinion, factually incorrect.
Yeah.
Politically and otherwise, but that's where he's going. That's his thing.
Yeah, it's his thing now.
In the same way, sometimes people go a little off and it hurts me, like Jimmy Dore. Love Jimmy Dore, but I don't understand where he's coming from anymore.
Some people think, here's the logic. Mm-hmm. Behind what these people do, because I've been halfway there.
Mm-hmm.
Some people call it a grift. Other people think it's such a repressed point of view because quote unquote show business is so liberal that you should
that
be able to
That is not even
spark-
true. There's so many conservative right wingers in show business, and the owners of this of the productions
very
tend
right
to
wing.
Be right wing. But there
so
is
maybe there's a
plenty,
misconception.
There is a myth
yeah.
that Hollywood
is
very, very liberal. Now, there are many progressive liberal people in entertainment, and that always has been the case. But there have always been also, concurrently, right-wingers and right-wing bosses and owners and things like that.
But I think that pushback comes from, okay, the myth that Hollywood's so liberal. So our voice, which is the white man, is repressed now. So we should be able to say these things. So that I think that's
no,
where
think
that comes from.
No, I think that what happens, I actually feel like, oh, I have a dollar in my pocket. I just found a dollar.
Is that
that's
a line
strange.
From RoboCop?
No.
Remember
I'd
that?
Buy that yeah, for a dollar.
Got it.
But the... I think that what happens, and this is me speculating, in the case of Matt Taibbi or Jimmy Dore or something like that.
I don't know who Matt Taibbi is.
These are people that were activists, progressive activists. I feel like something happens in their personal life, or they, even though they're working so hard, for some reason they get they get a hard time from others on the left where they don't deserve it. And almost like there's an ego bruise, something. It's like, well, I'm going to the other side.
There's a doubling down that happens.
Yeah, yeah.
Where it's like, oh, okay, you don't think I can say, watch this. And then they double down, double down.
But I feel like it's always personal. The personal is political. It's a trope for a reason.
Yeah, I would like to know what it was. I watched Nick before he left New York, and Nick would make me die laughing.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't going over with the New York crowds that much. I'd be at the back of the
room. Oh, I always would see him do very well.
The Stand, like the last couple years before he left, he was struggling. Because he'd open with like, what's going on, y'all, gay? Like that would be the first line out of the gate. And I still use it, but it's great. But he would push them away so far and just be like, ah, you're all a bunch of liberal cocksuckers.
That's about something going on inside. And yeah. I do feel like anyone that is right wing in general, something has to be wrong. Something, you have to be upset about something else, or you're looking for a tribe or what have you. Because a lot of the people that support Trump, now those people are neurodivergent. I don't know what's going on there, but it is not in their interest to keep supporting conservatives and those that serve their constituents, which happen to be in the 1% or the wealthy in life. There is no evidence to support that voting Republican helps the working class or helps anybody struggling. All these myths that people keep swallowing, but I do think there's a core of people that are hardcore to the right because they don't like diversity. They like
diversity, but they don't like the way that diversity is presented in their world, where they're like, I'm all for diversity, but hey, I lost my job to that.
No, that's racism. Lost your job
that's
to
just
that.
Racism. Yeah,
that's straight up racism. You're not all for diversity. And also, you didn't lose your job to that. You lost the job to the right wing head of the company who is undercutting your pay. You're mad at the wrong person. This is historical. Those that come in and will work for next to nothing. When somebody's asking to be paid fairly, and then they're mad at the person who is even in more dire straits.
She's saying, and I'm following the logic on this, that Republicans will blame liberals when in essence they should be blaming the Republican who's the head of the corporation.
It's called projection. You accuse the other of doing what you're doing.
I get what you're saying.
It's hard to even call them Republicans, and they are not the party of Lincoln, and that's why I don't like the Lincoln Project. They have not been the party of Lincoln since the Civil Rights era. But there is no, they're there for those supporting, especially if you are not wealthy, supporting the Republicans at this point. Now, if you are a person who
what
is
about
racist,
taxation?
But that people don't want to pay taxes, it doesn't help society. If you want good public schools, if you want,
you have to pay taxes.
You pay taxes.
Yeah, I pay taxes.
And the thing is there's no benefit to anyone to lower taxes. And guess what? Corporations aren't paying their taxes. They get away with it. But this revenue that serves the city, that serves social services, that impacts your life positively, not paying taxes.
Why don't people on Twitter say this?
I'm sure they do. It's just one of those things where people like the sound of not paying taxes. Mm-hmm. And it's,
I would like to pay less taxes.
Yeah, of course that's...
And get the same thing.
Right.
But then that's me
being
greedy,
isn't it? And also, socialism, deliberately misunderstood. We are socialists. Have you ever been to a public school? Have you ever been to an airport? Have you ever been on a highway? Have you ever been on Amtrak? That's socialism. Because you pay...
But
and
people,
when we bail...
like extreme socialism.
No, but the
what's
thing
extreme
is...
What's extreme socialism?
If you're talking about Lenin, Stalin...
Yeah.
Any in history in other countries... Their version of socialism, that has never been here. And our version of socialism, which we are socialists since the founding, when there is any time where people kick in money.
People think Canada's socialist. How does Canadian socialism differ from American socialism?
And British socialism provides a social safety net and health care.
Yeah.
That's,
we don't do that.
We don't do that. And the thing is there's plenty of Republicans that have been trying to undo the New Deal have hated what Roosevelt did, which did nothing but uplift the country. Now, people used to just die in the streets, poor people, the elderly.
They still do. There's people outside that die in the
streets. But what I'm saying is it was the norm. It was the norm. There was no social security. There was no public works. There was none of these things that Roosevelt introduced in the New Deal. And the Republicans hate that stuff. They don't want that kind of equity because you can't be as divisive as you need to be. And as I said, Republicans didn't really go off the rails until the Civil Rights era.
Yeah.
They didn't want to be the party of Lincoln.
That Trump
anymore.
Was the best Republican president
well,
ever.
Well, endorsed by the KKK? How can you... It is indefensible to identify as Republican at this point. Indefensible. I would have said since Reagan.
What if you're a DeSantis guy?
That doesn't help me out. If you had to choose.
Okay, say this. If they go, Janine, there's going to be a new president. Uh-huh. Joe Biden said he's not going to do it anymore. It's between DeSantis and Trump. And
first of all,
I'm moving to Canada.
No.
Who would you go
for? It's not
for?
That. First of all, neither. That's a devil's bargain.
You have to pick one.
No, I don't have to pick one because that's absurd. First of all, Joe Biden shouldn't have even, I don't know how that happened. He was just given to us in the primaries. Like, he's the guy now.
Didn't you think there was other people that were better suited for that
job? Of course there was, but whatever the powers that be are made this decision for us.
Why do they do that?
I don't know why. I don't know.
It doesn't make sense. Why isn't the best person for the job having that job?
Well, there's a number of things. First of all, the Electoral College needs to be changed. Also, we have to undo all the illegal redistricting and the gerrymandering that's been going on, and the voting, the software for voting, it can easily be tampered with. This
Do you
is
think
not,
it is?
Oh, Diebold? For sure it was.
Do
during
you vote?
Yes, of course I
went
do.
And voted
yeah,
because
yeah.
I'm allowed to now. I wasn't allowed to because I just became a citizen.
Uh-huh.
And I get very excited when I go and vote. Uh-huh. And then I see these old people that shouldn't be out of their homes that run the voting. And I'm happy that they're volunteering, uh-huh. but I'm also very
oh,
scared.
Oh, no, they're not the problem.
No.
The problem is like
the machines,
which any software can be tampered with. And it was there's a documentary called Hacking Democracy that shows how the Diebold software during the...
He thinks that you can't steal an election.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting. It's just business, by the way. And
is
they
it business?
Do another. It's just business. It's not tinfoil hat stuff. It's been going on in other countries, in our country, and at George Washington's minions, and in the early days, they would have minions pay people in beer to vote multiple times. That's called business.
Do you see?
And
he doesn't
it's because you don't want to believe that because it's emotionally difficult.
No, but a grand collusion to sway the presidential election, I think, is...
It is not a grand collusion. It only takes a handful of people. It takes Walter O'Dell, who owned the Diebold software,
Thank you.
Of the Republican National Committee in Ohio, who is on record saying, I'll do anything it takes to get this election away from Kerry. Also, Shonda Rhimes did an episode that showed you how the election was stolen from John Kerry.
Do you remember when Antonin Scalia illegally stopped
the recount? That's illegal.
Yeah.
And he should have recused himself as Supreme Court.
All the time.
Yes, it does.
In a country where democracy is supposed to be king.
We're not a democracy.
There's not a democracy.
It's a managed democracy.
I knew this.
It's a managed
democracy.
There's no such thing. Power seeks to... Until the human condition changes, this will never change. But
how's the human condition change?
No, until it does, this will never change. How I guess we would evolve to a Buddha nature where people would be like, I am not going to seek...
People
power.
Have that in them, right?
Oh, there are some. There are people that are very fair and equitable.
We are.
I'd like to think so. We're not in seats of power.
Right.
Elon Musk getting Twitter, I think, just to destroy it, but also reinstating Trump's Twitter.
I don't even think Trump has tweeted since he's back on.
I feel like
you think he
I
will.
I feel like why wouldn't he? But why would, and the use of the N-word as soon as Elon Musk took over Twitter.
Is it back?
Spiked like a 20-fold.
I don't use it on Twitter.
No, nor should anyone use it on Twitter. But going back to what I was saying about it doesn't take a grand collusion.
It takes a
handful of people. And you don't want to believe that. But if I told you they steal elections in Uganda, how do you feel about that?
I would think it's easier in Uganda than Uganda.
That's just racism. Not racism. That's nationalism. What is different in Uganda than America? What is different?
I think our system is probably more built in with
He's not making a point, is
but
he?
But it isn't. It isn't. And also the Electoral College.
It's probably easier to steal an election in America than it is in Uganda.
Yes, it is. With software and also because there's so many people that refuse to believe it. And also the press is happy to report about stolen elections around the world. Not here.
Yeah.
They don't want to report about it.
If you say an election's stolen here, you're crazy.
Yeah,
but when
you're
it happens
accused
in like Brazil or Uganda.
If our court system aren't able to, you know, figure out if it actually happened or not, it's, first of all,
if Antonin Scalia can illegally stop a recount, which he should have recused himself from because family members worked in the Bush campaign, also Clarence Thomas, his wife, worked on the Bush campaign, that means they shouldn't have had a say on the Supreme Court, right? That's an ethics violation. That's two Supreme Court people. So what do you say to that?
But they
did it and stopped the recount.
Yeah.
So that is corrupt right on its very nature. There also shouldn't be lifetime appointments. I'm sorry to be yelling at you. This is why I don't like to do podcasts.
Yeah, okay, we can stop.
No, not that. But I'm saying this is not me taking something from you. It feels like people are trying to take something from you.
How do you mean?
People feel like, don't tell me that.
Right.
I hate you now for telling me that. But
do you hate Janine now?
No, you can be right and still, unfortunately, the reality is the Supreme Court ruled the way they did. Bush became president. Now that's just our, as right may be, just like, this is what it is. This is what it is.
But look at the repercussions. And the thing is, I'm not satisfied with that.
Right.
Look at the illegal invasion of Iraq, which led to Afghanistan and the refugee crisis. This
and
is still ongoing.
Yeah.
This is going to be for years.
I get Janine's point very clearly.
And the rise of the Taliban, you can connect to the Reagan administration. All of these things. It's called blowback. And there's a great book about it by Chalmers Johnson. But the thing is there has to be responsibility taken by this country for what we do around the world. We're quick to blame others, and we're quick to punish others. Look at what never got solved at Abu Ghraib. Look at all these war crimes. Look at all these lives destroyed. There's hundreds and thousands of people dead and wounded that will never recover from the illegal invasion of Iraq. And that wasn't the first time. There's been three illegal invasions of Iraq. And it's not okay to just say, it is what it is.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? This impacts, and the debt has not been paid to Iraq. There's also illegal uranium being used in the soil. There's groundwater contaminated. There's children born with birth. This is very, very serious stuff. And this does not endear us to people around the world.
People view America as a bad place.
And not all of us are, but we are held hostage by the right wing of our government.
I think I'm a good
person.
The
way Israel is held hostage to the right wing of the Knesset. Britain is held hostage to the right wing of the parliament. Doesn't represent us fairly. Doesn't represent
Israel. But there's bad people on the left, correct?
I have no idea. They don't have seats of power.
They don't have powers. Okay.
You know what I mean? And if they are bad, what are they bad about? And the thing is, it's not impacting your life, really. They're not in government.
So you're saying that even though there's a Democratic president, that
like Obama, he's what Republicans were in the 70s.
Okay.
And
so
I love Barack Obama.
He's
too
conservative.
He's what they call a centrist.
Okay.
And this nonsense about trying to continually reach across the aisle when Mitch McConnell's made it very clear there will be no bipartisanship.
Yeah.
And Kamala Harris has been neutered. You know what I mean?
She
like
doesn't
all these
talk
things.
A lot.
And AOC, who tries to do the right thing, gets, you know, shat upon constantly for trying to do stuff. Look at Nancy Pelosi's husband hit on the head with a hammer, almost killed by a Trump supporter.
Was it?
Yes, it was.
I didn't read the whole story.
And
it wasn't a guy. He didn't have a lover.
And they also like to say, no, this is a mental illness. This is not about that. When it is clear that the right wing and Alex Jones and Trump and others, they foment this. They push their people. And that January 6th thing, this is nuts. And they wanted to... there was chanting to kill Nancy Pelosi. For some reason, they just despise her for some reason. Even though she's as conservative as it gets.
Did you meet him?
Who?
Alex Jones.
No.
I did his show in Austin, And
he was mocking the
shooting victim's
family? He was very lighthearted
and very funny because he knew that there was a comedian on. And at one point, he gave me Charlie Sheen's jacket from the movie Red Dawn.
You know what? He can go fuck himself. And also, after the court case, he was like, good luck for them getting their money. How
it was
painful
$1 billion
for a parent.
That's a lot
of money.
But
listen to this. A parent who's lost their child in a shooting, and Alex Jones sits there day after day talking about that it's a hoax.
You know about everything that's going on in this country.
Not everything. There's many things
well
I have no idea about.
Everything that's topical and political.
Well, there's plenty of people that know
off.
A lot more than me.
So when you had this moment in your career where you're doing pretty much everything you want and you're fighting to evolve yourself, and then you get into this because you have such a brilliant political mind and you feel like that holds you back. Do you feel like it was?
No, I don't have such a brilliant political mind. And
come
like
on.
I said, I didn't. I felt it was the right thing
or
to do.
Are you just
and
inquisitive?
I'm intellectually curious.
Okay, that makes sense. But that comes across
working
as brilliant.
At Air America,
you know that, right?
I felt was important. Now, around the time that was happening,
was
my career
money?
Was starting. No.
Okay.
And in fact, a number of us didn't take a salary for a while because the owners ran it into the ground. But
what other comedians were on there? By
Al
the way?
Franken was on there. Liz Winstead, Mark Maron, Sam Cedar, Chuck D. There's other
it
comedians.
It seems like talent laden, and that it should have.
It was a fun place to work, but it was run poorly.
Did you find comedy in the trying politics of the time?
Oh yeah, there's always things, but sometimes
would you guys laugh a lot.
Oh yeah, yeah. But sometimes there's things that are so painful. I would cry a lot too. I unfortunately. Don't handle these things well. I get so frustrated that I will cry.
Really?
Yeah.
You do yoga still?
No, I never did yoga.
You seem like a yoga person.
No, I tried it once and it made me feel nauseous.
Why?
I don't know why.
Like just, you were too centered.
I just felt nauseous. And also, I don't like yoga because I'm sorry to be vulgar, but I'm very gassy.
Really? So
I do apologize, people. No,
people
I would if I did yoga. I would.
Did you, the one time you did it, did you fart?
No, I didn't, but it was just suppression.
I've been in classes where people fart a lot.
Anyway, I just want to make something clear. I don't think I'm a great political mind. I felt like it was the right thing to do. My career was already dipping anyway when I got this opportunity to work at Air America. But I also felt it was the right thing to do. So I took 2 to 3 years off of basically everything to work at this radio station. And
where
then I
was
got,
it
was here. There was
in
a,
New York.
In New York and Los Angeles.
Yeah.
And I then got offered a job on the West Wing, which I really wanted to do.
Good show.
It's a
Aaron
great
Sorkin.
Show.
Brilliant
and,
show.
And I was thrilled to do it. And it was supposed to be 3 episodes, and it turned out to be a whole season. And I feel like they
Where
forgot because they were Los
Here?
Angeles
because
it was a writer's strike, and I feel like they forgot I was only supposed to be on for 3 seasons. I'd never brought it up.
And for 3 episodes.
For 3 episodes.
So they're like, oh, keep
3 episodes,
Janina.
And then the show that was the last season. I was Jimmy Smith's campaign manager. It was the one with the wonderful Alan Alda running against.
I've never
Jimmy
watched
Smith.
The full West Wing.
And Bradley Whitford the. Best guy in the world. It just was wonderful, wonderful experience. And then I tried to, like, I would like to act again more. And apparently it's very difficult to say, I'd like to do more. I'd like to come back. And I'm not asking, nobody owes me a job at all.
Do you know
but
I stopped
an
acting,
audition
and then
be,
I said I want to act again. And I had an audition and they pinned me for the first role that I was up for. I didn't get it, but I got pinned.
What's that mean, pin?
Pin is when they're like, oh, we love him.
Oh, great.
Is he available?
Because you never know what it will lead
then
to.
You hope
they can
someone
remember.
Else gets sick, the first choice.
Or no, you hope, and every once in a while I'll get jobs, and then there's offers that I will turn down because it's like, this is not, this writing is not, you know, if this is a comedy, then I don't want to do it. And then I'd like to do a lot of dramatic. I have a movie coming out December 16th starring Anna Gunn and Linus Roche called The Apology. And these are these wonderful movies you do because you want to do it that are no money things. And unfortunately, they don't have a lot of distribution. And that's what a lot of actors do because 0.5% of SAG-AFTRA has that sustained career success where it's just golden straight through. And they work and work and work. And people
you had that for 10 years.
No, I had luck. For 10 years.
But
I
were
wasn't
very
like
good and very funny.
Oh,
I
feel
you.
Like people thought she does one thing.
I don't
but
think
I'm
that.
Not saying poor me. And it's an elective profession. No one makes you do it. And I have a lot of gratitude for that great 10 years. It was painful when it ended. I've been unfamous longer than I was famous. So
you're
now
still famous.
It's now.
You know that.
No.
When you walk down the street,
I'm not pandering.
I'm not, but can I say?
No,
I'm
sometimes
not wrong all
people,
the time.
Every once in a while, people will say,
you
remind
stage,
me of.
People
oh,
know.
Some.
When you walk down the street, people see you.
No. Sometimes people.
You get recognized on a plane.
Every once in a while.
I did yesterday.
Every
My
once
wife
in a while.
Over and
but some people say
upset.
You remind me of.
And they think,
and they'll say that you look sort of like. But one of my favorite.
Mort Saul.
Mort Saul. Yeah. Exactly. One of my favorite stories is that at Sketchfest in San Francisco a number of years ago, I was walking and smoking a cigarette, and this gentleman said, "Hey, can I get a cigarette?" And so I gave him a cigarette, and he said, "Can I use your lighter?" And I'm lighting his cigarette, and he
it
said,
was Bernie Madoff.
You remind me of. That girl. What's her name? I think she was Daria. I wasn't, but a lot of people think I was the voice of Daria. And I said, Janine Garofalo? And he said, yeah, whatever happened to her? Probably dead by now. And he's smoking. I thought that was so...
Did you say
I didn't
anything
correct,
or did
no,
you laugh?
No. I, at first, I'm not going
to
say, no, I'm alive.
You wanted
but
to correct
even
him.
Even people in my peer group will say, why did you quit acting and quit doing stand-up? I didn't.
What do you think of Bill Maher?
I actually am glad that he's there. I don't always agree with him. I think he can be a hard ass sometimes and entrenched in his ways, like a lot of people. I don't agree with his Israel stance,
but you don't define him as a human based
no,
on
not at all.
Political
in
opinion.
Fact, he is always was always very supportive of my stand up, and I remember opening for him at Catch a Rising Star in Cambridge.
Yeah.
A billion years ago, and he couldn't have been nicer. And he, I used to love doing that show. I don't know why I haven't.
When it was politically incorrect, or when it was.
I did politically incorrect and this new one, and I haven't been back in a while. I'd love to do it, but there's nothing to, no reason to have me. Like, there's not things to promote.
But, like, if you have the movie coming out, you would
right,
go back
but it's
on
not
show.
The type of movie that people are like.
He's important for comedy, right?
He's important for lots of reasons. And. A lot of stand-up comics are very important because they get to speak where others don't get to speak. And there's many stand-up comics who are vital to the culture. And it's always been that way.
Yeah.
And hopefully it always will be.
Jeff Dunham was on the CBS morning show today.
Mm-hmm.
And he's one of those guys
now.
Was
Peanut there?
Yeah, I think Peanut was
okay.
there. Peanut's the purple one, right?
One of the puppets. They're usually together.
And he basically was, Jeff Dunham was standing up being like, I'm one of the important guys that thinks comedy is very important right mm-hmm. now. And he was taking that, you know, like almost a free speech advocate type of role, which
well,
a lot of comics do.
There's a difference between free speech and then spouting off.
Yeah. There's a big
a
difference
bunch of
between
blog,
them. Some people say free speech, but they really just want to say the N-word.
They just want to, yeah.
And then they'll go, well, it's just a word. It's not that important. And you're
but
like, no, that's
but they'll take huge issue with something that somebody else says.
It's
but what was he saying on? I would never say, as a comic, we're so important. I would say,
no,
there are comics, not me,
like, I'm one of the comics
important.
That just believe it's really important to be funny in this time. But there's never been an easy time
but
for
there's,
comedy.
I know, there is, in the same way people always say, children are our future. They say that for every gen. So which one is it?
Yeah.
Which gen? They've been saying that since I was little, since children are our future. Isn't the future now? And on the same powerful cabals, the
future?
So
there's always shit going on, right?
Right. There's it's
like there's
always
shit.
Stuff
like
going on.
You bring up the Bush era. It was the
every
same thing.
Era.
Okay.
Is,
so
the
it's
comedy
all the
is
same.
Important, but people like to say it now more than
now
ever.
Now more than ever. It's now more than ever. We need to say
right.
what we. And it's like, no, you're just
no.
Trying
it's
to sell
always.
A ticket.
It's always
just be funny.
Right. It would. Yeah.
Yeah.
Somebody should tell Peanut.
I really love you so much. I love talking to you.
Oh,
and I
thank
didn't know
you.
That you disagree with me so often, which I really...
Do I disagree with you?
Yeah, because whenever I say something, you go, no. And
no,
then
no,
you,
I was saying... I guess what I'm saying, and this is why I don't like to be on podcasts, because I'm overbearing and unlikable.
That's what it is.
I feel overbearing and unlikable. But
you're very likable.
No. Again, I'm not pandering. Okay. I have a feeling it's annoying for the listener, but I don't... I guess I do disagree, but I always feel like it's a different angle. Like when people say, I think it's this.
It's fun to talk.
It is. It is. See, this conversation to me is a podcast worth doing because we're talking about something. Whereas sometimes you do podcasts where it's just really about non-essential banter, or some of the people are trying to be funny, just trying to get a laugh all the time, yeah. which can really get in the way of podcasts.
Right. Did you do Marc Maron's podcast?
Yeah.
And that, it was a big podcast when it first started.
Oh my God, I did
still
it.
Probably
yeah,
is.
In the early days, I got to do it a couple times in his garage.
Yeah.
And it was thrill. And like I said, he was at Air America. And
you guys go way back.
Yeah, yeah, I met him.
Did you date
probably
him?
In
Am I allowed to ask that?
No, I never dated Marc Maron.
Did you date famous people?
Sort of.
Was the best person you ever dated not a famous person?
Oh, for sure. There, I've had wonderful, wonderful boyfriends, mates over the years. Now dating is
mates. You're my mate.
Partners,
yeah, partner.
Whatever. Now there's. I am reticent to say dating because it would be just intermittent intimacy.
I understand.
With these people, not codified as dating.
Did you have a big house in LA? In
not
the
at
hills?
All. No, I had roommates.
Why?
Because I like it, and also it started that way. My first place I lived with Jeff Garland.
Yeah.
On
He's
Genesee.
Still around.
Yes, of course he is.
And I heard a very funny story.
Rondell
about
Sheridan
him.
Lived there, and Robert Schimmel, the late Robert Schimmel, was our landlord.
Robert Schimmel was great.
And
was
then
landlord?
I lived in a
That's
house
racist.
With what?
That's racist.
What did you say about
Robert Schimmel was my landlord. That's racist. Schimmel was fantastic.
I know, very
I
funny.
I loved Schimmel.
Very funny. And then I
very
lived
very good career.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Very dirty, but mm-hmm. elegantly
very funny.
Dirty. Yes.
And I lived in a house for a long time with Margaret Cho, Laura Milligan, Greg Barrett, and Jerry Finelli, who was in a band called Red Cross. And I was dated Greg Barrett, who the creator of He's Not That Into You.
Yeah.
Wonderful human, one of the best people I've ever met in my life. And then my intermittent intimacy with some of these others have gone on to be quite famous.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't, it was not technically dating like that. They wanted to have me around during the day for pictures on the red carpet. I'm not really,
wow.
Not that it's just one of those things where they had others that maybe would be more.
I get it.
You know what I mean?
An entanglement.
Yeah. And, but I've had wonderful, they're not a bum fella in the bunch.
Like, really?
Yeah. Just
all good guys.
All lovely, lovely, lovely gentlemen.
You're very blessed. Not many women can say that. Not many men can say that.
Yeah. And if I've had some that I don't, I'm not recalling it. It's just really, and I'm still friends with many of them.
You stay friends with your exes.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've never done that. I'm friends with Melissa a little bit.
Uh-huh.
Melissa and I dated when I was 18 or 19. Mm-hmm. And then I went to this therapist named Alan on the Upper West Side that many of the comics in the city would go to. And Alan, every time I would leave, I would go home and almost divorce my wife. He would say, this is horrible. You need uh-huh. to get out of it. I'm still with my wife, by the way. We have uh-huh. a lovely daughter. And he said, your intimacy issues come from Melissa. You never got over her. You need to call her up and tell her that you loved her. And I go, she's got a husband and two kids and lives in right. Long Island.
Now's not the time.
He goes, you have to do it. And at that point in time, I try to reach out. I go, hey, are you around for a call? And I go, what am I listening to this dumb therapist
for? I feel
for?
Like that is, you can say nice things like, I just want you to know that our time together was wonderful. Yeah. I'm so happy for you
I
now.
Loved you. I never got over
yeah,
you.
There's no reason to say that to a married
Why
person.
Why would a therapist say that?
I'm not sure, unless they want to create trouble to keep you coming back.
I think that's
therapy.
What it is, and I wasn't even paying him that well. Uh-huh. But he was. I really didn't
that's,
enjoy
yeah,
it.
I feel like that's not great advice.
Thank you.
And yeah, it's yeah. nice. People always want to hear nice things. It's lovely,
yeah.
and it's lovely
but
to
not
feel
to hear,
validated.
I never got over you.
But unless you couch it in, listen, it's just, this is me. My therapist said that, but I want you to know that I'm so happy for you and your husband
that's
and all that. I guess, but I never got over you, but I'm working. I don't know that. No, it's not helpful.
My wife
think
and I
helpful.
Are getting along much better now. We communicate. Were yeah. you ever married?
Yes, but this was accidentally. I got married to Rob Cohen. There's three of them. This one was
three Rob Cohens
in Los Angeles. We got married in Las Vegas.
Yeah.
In a blackout drunk state. Apparently it was.
You don't
was,
drink anymore.
No.
Sober
it was
how long?
Real. We were married for 20 years. We were married for 20 years and didn't even know that we had signed papers.
Come on.
Until he got married for real and we had to have it dissolved by a notary public. And here's the key to staying married for 20 years. Don't know it.
Yeah.
Live on different coasts and date other people the whole time. That's the key
great
to a
idea.
20 year.
You don't drink anymore.
No, I quit in 2001.
You used to be a vodka drinker.
I used to be a vodka and a Patron drinker.
That's heavy.
Yeah.
You would get fucked up.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Not
miss,
proud of that. Not
you don't
proud
miss
of that.
It. You feel better. I do
miss sometimes
Heineken Zero.
The altering one's consciousness and that how great that first drink feels and you decompress.
Escaping.
I miss that very much.
There's a, yeah.
But I don't miss everything
You don't get to escape
else.
Anymore.
No.
I don't escape either.
I got a bad back. Sometimes I can get a back pill. My arthritis medication. If I crush up my arthritis medication,
Smart.
Lick it off the back of my hand to remind me of my youth. This is true. Walk
you
super,
don't.
I do.
You snort up. Your-
no. I lick it. Because I used to lick. This is back
what
in the days of Speed.
Yeah.
And I used to put Speed in the 80s. And
come on. You do this
no
with
reason,
a pain pill. An arthritis
this,
pill.
No, this is arthritis medication. And
oh, my God.
I crush it up. This just sometimes to just think of my youth.
Yeah.
And I lick it off the back of my hand. And I walk super fast, chug a Red Bull while smoking a cigarette. And I can get a little wacky for 15 minutes.
And then you come back down.
And then I'd come back down. And so that's how resourceful I've had to get over as I'm in AARP, as an older woman. It works for about 15 minutes. Where
you know you look better now than you did when
that's
you were
not
younger.
True. It's just that I look
See,
so shit. No.
Me.
I just
you
look so shit
me.
Before.
You
All you got to do is look
wonderful,
not
You're
a shit.
You're in fantastic
And then
shape.
People give you compliments you don't deserve. I look like the...
What's up, Nick?
Least photogenic person. And actually,
you know
come
Janine?
In. You should have somebody else come on because I
do you know
I think
Janine?
People have, hello, nice
come
to
in.
You.
Sit here for a minute.
And actually, I should stop talking.
Why?
So because I'll just keep talking and there's no reason
just
for
sit,
me.
Just sit here with Nick for a minute and then you can go unless you have to go. What's up? What are you
Nick,
in town
you take
for?
This one and I'll take the outside. Hello.
Nice to see you. My hands
I'm
here.
Good. How are you?
Good.
You guys know
What's
each
up?
Other, right?
I don't know. Have we met before?
I don't know if we ever have, actually.
I think we've been in the same
Oh, yeah.
Area.
We've been next to each other
yes.
in on shows, I think.
Yeah.
You go there.
Yeah. What's up? Janine's got to go.
All right. I got to go, because also I talk too much. I'm doing this out of respect for your listeners.
I just walked you. Sorry.
And also,
I'll
talk
people.
Yeah.
When I talk.
Are you going to leave now?
I'm still talking.
We're literally wrapping up the show. So tell them the movie that's coming out on December the 16th.
So there's a movie, December 16th, called The Apology, starring Anna Gunn from Breaking Bad.
Yeah.
And Linus Roche from, I think, Law & Order and Game of Thrones.
Mm-hmm.
And myself. And it's called The Apology. And I hope people go see it.
I think they will. Where is it playing? Select theaters?
I don't know. Select theaters. And then I'm sure it'll just go into that ether of streaming.
I fucking love you. Thank you for coming
I
on.
I love you.
I know you didn't have to. What are you doing here? You opening for Nate?
Yeah.
Where?
Yeah, not in town, but I'm on the road with him.
I thought he's here. I saw you at Skankfest.
Yeah.
And you were there.
No. I'm just here for Thanksgiving. Just
shit, it
family,
wasn't you. Who
family.
Was it?
Who
was with him at Skankfest? It was Veter.
Veter.
Yeah. I always think that you open for him all the time. You do.
I do.
How fun is that?
It's a lot of fun.
Nate's doing good. He's playing very good B rooms now.
Yeah,
he's selling them
just
half
starting
out.
You know, I mean, I feel like I get a lot of the. I should take a lot of the credit.
Isn't
for it
fun to
yeah.
do that?
Yeah.
Did you ever think that you were going to be doing theaters of that ilk?
Yeah, it's nuts.
You thought that?
No. I mean, it's a crazy experience.
You Chafin sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Veter.
Yep.
With Justin.
Justin.
Yeah.
Graham.
Graham K.
How's
Justin doing weight-wise?
He is doing good, you know? It's a fun. Sometimes I follow him or vice versa.
Yeah.
And we have quite the combo of looks.
He's a good time.
Yeah. He's a great time. We smoke cigars and hang out.
I like Justin a lot. When he lived in New York, we would smoke cigars a lot. What's your favorite cigar?
I get a lot of Cubans. So Monte Cristo's
Hoyo de Monterey Epicure number 2. Have you tried it?
Ooh, I don't know.
It's mine and Ari's favorite cigar. You
nice.
Should try it. Did you know Janine Garofalo came on here? She, yeah. We totally thought different. She's like a huge Trump supporter, and it blew our minds.
Well, that's kind of what I was thinking. I
did not.
She has a conservative vibe.
She said Biden was Hitler.
I mean,
she said that
it's everything we've thought, you know, for years.
She's brilliant.
No, she's the best.
What do you got going on? You're opening for Nate. What else?
Just hanging out, you know.
You bite your nails or you clip them like that?
I clip them like that.
Yeah, I clip mine too. And then it's hard to do, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah.
And I got stubby fingers too.
I don't know if we're, you know, in the same.
Yours are stubbier
than
mine.
If you can.
Thank God. I got to take a picture of your hands. Send it to my wife and tell her how lucky she is.
You could relate to my fingers. That's, I didn't think you were going to go there, but I like that.
I just saw them. That's what I thought. I haven't seen you in quite some time. It's good to see you back in New York.
Yeah, it's great to be back.
You doing movies or something?
Yeah, I got, you know, some movies coming out.
What is
coming
it?
Out. It's
Janine's got one with two people I never heard of.
Bittersweet, you know. So Billy Baldwin's in it. Mm-hmm. And so I play like
it's one of the top six Baldwins.
Yeah.
Yeah. He probably elevated
somebody.
Yeah.
So he's a great guy. And just hustling.
Where you live now, LA?
I live in LA.
You're married. You got a kid?
I'm married. I got a kid.
How many kids?
One kid.
I have one kid too. So are you one and done?
Year and a half. I think we'll have another.
Yeah.
You know?
You try. Ryan?
Not yet.
No.
But she's like, how old's your kid?
She's five.
Okay. So now you're like, all right, let's give it a shot.
Yeah,
now
but I'm still my wife doesn't want to have more. So then we were going to adopt, but you can't adopt if you're white. I'm not even kidding. This is a real thing.
It's hard.
Janine was ranting about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You got, you know, I don't know. Ukraine. You got to be willing to go into a combat zone.
We have friends that adopted from Russia. Their kids are short. And I'm short. You're short.
Yeah.
I'm 5'5".
There you go.
They're short kids. They're like 5 feet.
Okay.
Maybe 4'11". But they're short. Very nice kids. One of them. The other one.
I got connections under 4 feet. So
really?
That's the, yeah.
Does it make it easier for you to adopt?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
See? It's not easy.
Get a little person.
Do you, really? Is there a lot of little people?
Actually, there are.
I mean, all babies are little people.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. I'm learning things here tonight.
All right. We can't in Jersey. You can't. There's one place. They're just like unless
it's just hard.
Unless
yeah. you're a person I've heard that it is really hard. Yeah. You know,
it
so
sucks. Mike Lawrence just got one.
Oh yeah, I saw that.
And they've been waiting a long time.
Yeah.
What's up, Jay? Do you want to do a surrogate?
No.
Do you know what that is?
Put a baby in somebody.
Yeah. Were you just
not
about
me,
to say
though,
me?
Right?
Yeah. That's what a surrogate is. Do you know
you
someone
have
that
to
would
be
care?
A surrogate?
Yeah. It pays like $10,000.
I heard now it pays a lot more than that. It's like you're lowballing yourself if you agree to this deal. I mean, there's like people making like $1 million.
I don't know about $1 million. You're hanging out with Nate too much.
Yeah.
All right. Let people know your website and shit. I got to get out of here.
Yeah. Yeah. You follow me at Nick Novicki. And that's my website too.
Nice.
And so, yeah.
All right.
You soon.
Where are we going to be? Midwest Tour. Me, Louis J. Gomez, Offend Everyone, December 2, 3, 4. Tickets are up at aaronberg.com. Also, Toronto Yuck Yucks, December 16th, 17th. Those are the dates. They're almost sold out, the early shows. We may add a Friday show. Get the tickets, aaronberg.com or lewisofskanks.com. Then January, we got Phoenix, we got Minnesota, we got Cuyahoga Falls. Also, I'm going to be at the Funny Bone in Hartford. Get tickets for that. Thank you so much. We had Janine Garofalo on the show. We did not know that she was, that far right wing. That blew my mind. All right, bye.